Hello, this is Tonce, a podcast of in-depth interviews about emotions and the way they shape our lives. I'm your host, Claire Tonti, and I'm so glad you're here for season two. Each week, I speak to writers, activists, experts, thinkers, and deeply feeling humans about their stories. My guest today, Joanna Bennett, wears her insides on her outsides. Her poetry speaks to the heart of things, little things that are really big things. What it feels like to watch someone you birthed into the world sleep beside you. The stretchy long days of parenting through isolation during a pandemic. The low hum of irritation at the socks on the floor or the blinding sentimentality of your box of Christmas decorations stored somewhere in the back of the cupboard to be rifled through when the time is right. Jo writes in a way that makes sense to a sleep-deprived, addled, sometimes hormonal brain. That's me, if you hadn't guessed. Her poetry gifts us fragments of womanhood and motherhood and aching love and the daily grind of parenting tiny humans. I first heard her poetry spoken about by Pandora Sykes on the Hilo podcast and very quickly ordered her 2020 book of poems called Tiny Lungs. Illustrated by her son, each group of words for me was a window into the heady mix that is parenthood, the fear, the exhaustion and the love. For me, poetry helps, especially when I'm bone achingly tired and overwhelmed, or hormonal, or just plain over everything. There's no pressure to finish a whole chapter, let alone a whole book. Poems can put your restless mind in touch with something bigger and brighter and deeper and wider than the dishes you're meant to be stacking in the dishwasher or the never-ending pile of clean washing, filling up baskets all over the house. Whether it's her words about the light on a sequin, or the heartbreaking simplicity of her poem Bones about grief and miscarriage and friendship, Joanna Bennett, or the poet Tatterhood as she writes under, helped me through some of the isolation this pandemic and COVID-19 has brought over the last few years. We had second babies, daughters who want to eat wise and scale precipitous heights. It's from her poem Wires about parenting her daughter. And we had them about the same time in 2020. And while Jo lives in Bristol and I in Melbourne, her third book, These Are My Delicious Sandwiches, speaks into so much of what I felt being pregnant when the world was beginning to lock down and what that would mean for me, but also for my baby and our little family unit. Jo is exactly as warm and funny and honest as I hoped she'd be. And her voice leapt out at me across the internet airwaves late at night in our backyard studio. I read somewhere once that sometimes putting art into the world is like sending out a beacon to your people to say, hello, here I am. Is anyone else out there feeling the same as me? And that's how I reckon it is with Jo. I hope you fall as much in love with her as I did during this conversation. A little more about Jo. In 2017, she was long listed for the Outspoken Prize for Poetry and in the December was commissioned by Gosh Arts to write a book for Great Ormond Street Hospital, which was subsequently turned into a film read by Rupert Everett. She is now the author of three books, Swimming Underwater, Tiny Lungs, and These Are My Delicious Sandwiches. Before we start, I wanted to give you a heads up that this conversation does include discussions of miscarriage, pregnancy loss, and infertility. So if you find these topics difficult, this one may not be for you, though in a big way, I found Jo's openness really healing and comforting. Here we are back again for Tonce Season 2. Let's kick it all off with all the feelings, and there are a lot in this one, with the delight of a human that is Joanna Bennett Tatterhood.
Hello, Jo. How are you?
I am so well. I'm so excited to be chatting with you, honestly. I can't tell you. It's a real pleasure for me.
Oh, thank you. Me too. I've been such a big fan of your work.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness. So we've actually never met, have we? We've just kind of spoken over Instagram.
Yeah.
Just here and there. So I wanted to ask you how you got into writing poetry, because I actually don't really know much about you other than what I've gleaned from reading your poems.
Well, I think that I've always loved writing since being a very little girl. It's my thing. I don't know if you have to have a thing, but I really love that as a creative outlet. And then the sort of Tatterhood writing came about when we had our first child, Arthur. And I was really struck at a really similar age to our daughter now, around about 18 months. We went on a trip to Los Angeles, and when we came back, the jet lag and the teeth and everything just kind of meant that sleep was very hard to get. So in those times where you're just lying there for ages in the dark, I was just trying to occupy my mind in a kind of pleasant way, trying to own the time rather than feeling frustrated at sort of this time spent where things weren't quite working. And I just was starting to write in my mind, going through the experiences in my mind. And then I would just jot them down onto paper when I got out of the darkened room. And I found it really, really, really beneficial at that time to just work through those feelings, because with the first child, all these things were so different. I find it extremely hard to vocalize that feeling of the challenge. I was talking to someone about it yesterday, because you don't at all want to be ungrateful. You're loving the experience and you're delighted, you know, to have these wonderful children. But there's just that feeling when things are just like, it's just really difficult, and it's so hard to describe. So I was just trying to work through those feelings and put them down onto paper. And that's where that all started, really. And then I just started sharing them through Instagram. And yeah, I really came to Instagram properly when, I suppose, a couple of years before Arthur. But it was a real game changer in terms of making connections with other parents, really, and sharing those experiences.
Yeah, because that's what comes so strongly through every poem I read. I found you through the high low, and I ordered Tiny Lungs, and it kind of winged its way over from the UK to here. And that's what struck me so strongly. I have two little kids, and there's just so many poems that I've read, and particularly when we're going through this pandemic as well, that just hit me so hard in my heart. One in particular I really loved, the first one, Bones.
Oh, yeah.
Could you, before we get onto your current book that I also loved and I got a copy sent through the email, could you tell me about Bones and why you wrote that poem?
Yeah, Bones is such a, like, I think I said to you before we came onto this, there's such a chance that my emotions are going to be so high and low, but I think that's a good thing. So with
it is.
Yeah, with Bones, without really realizing it, when we were trying to have our first child, so it's Arthur and Mabel, and Arthur was our third pregnancy. And then, yeah, it was a bit difficult, but we didn't really think about it too much. It was a surprise when he, when we were expecting him, because it was after quite a lot of Christmas drinks, so because I thought we weren't expecting him. But that was all worked out well. But with when we wanted to come about and think about having another child a few years later, things just didn't quite work out how I thought they would, or how either of us thought they would. So Mabel is our 10th pregnancy. So we had a lot of miscarriages along the way.
Wow.
So Bones was really a way of trying to work out and process the thoughts of that pathway and the miscarriages and the things that were kind of going awry at that time, because it's a very isolating experience to go through, where I definitely a glass half full person. So I found myself, when I was going through that, you're kind of like, hey, everything's great, everything's fine. Yeah. I'm doing that very English way of like, I am great. You know, when you're absolutely slowly falling apart and, you know, carrying on working when all these things were happening. But I think I found it so beneficial when people, well, just them being there, actually, just people being there, knowing that something wasn't quite right and just being there. I was just really thankful for people. And that was really just my way of expressing that and thinking of other people I knew that were going through things at the same time that were similar. And just that, like, this is really difficult. I know this is difficult. I may not know quite what to say to you, but I'm totally here and I'm going to try and carry some of this for you. And we'll get through it. We don't quite know what that end pathway is going to be, but whatever that is, we'll make it okay. So that's what came out of that one. I wrote it in this room, actually, and it was a really, really difficult time of, like, very confused time, just not quite knowing when the narrative, I remember just thinking, like, this isn't how I thought this part of the story was going to be. And just trying to work with that and being like, okay, the hope, the excitement, thinking things are going to happen in a certain way, but then getting quite far along thinking, okay, it probably isn't gonna work out like that, and that's fine again. And just working through all of that, and I am so thankful to have that poem, because with all of them, they just completely come out, and there's probably not a huge amount of I think about them for a really long time, and then when they actually write them, it's quite a quick process, and they put them down, and then I'm like, huge relief and huge release to have done it. But I'm so pleased to have done that one, because it's been a huge and profoundly moving experience for me, and other people have found some comfort from that or shared it, relating to that experience of them, their own, or a different experience that they're finding challenging.
Yeah, because I've only had, well, not only, but I had one miscarriage that shocked me in its intensity that it happened to me. I had, it was with our second pregnancy, and I was sort of floored and ended up on the floor and in an ambulance at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I just had never been prepared, I felt, for an experience like that, even though I kind of heard the term miscarriage, or you kind of hear it bandied about like, oh, that could happen to you. But I hadn't really thought about it being such a visceral experience. What was that like? Because 10 miscarriages, I'm so sorry. That's so hard.
Well, it's interesting that you said the phrasing there where you said, oh, I've only had one, but one is hard. One is enough. One is the one, I think. Once you've had that one and you're a different person, I don't, you know, I'm a huge supporter about talking about this. And I don't mean that to be like terrifying or worrying to say, like, you know, it's but the gravity around it should be honoured. And whoever's gone through it should be like, that was really hard. I probably will swear, but yeah. And that we need to honour that and be like, you did such a great, you know, you have done so well to go through that. And to just say, yeah, like to give yourself the praise for that, really. And with 10, honestly, when it got to about 6, we're like, okay, we know what to do. So I don't know. Genuinely just had to like kind of keep some humour around it, actually. And I'd honestly, the 9, I mean, it just sounds ridiculous talking about it, really. But I just remember taking Arthur. We went to a festival and I was just like, I just knew it was happening, but we were working and doing some stuff at a festival. And he's just like, okay, that's what happens. And then we just get on with it. But I also remember like thinking the first time, it's like, it's so painful. Like it hurts so much. And it was just like, no one really mentions that, like, it's going to really hurt. Like maybe just like, here's some information. This will be really helpful. Take these tablets, maybe sit down and do some of this. I don't know. I just think sharing those experiences without fear and just saying you'll be fine. It's going to be okay. But this is what you're going to have to go through. But again, I really took on the experience of trying to have another one, I think. And I found that for me really helpful, and that I read reams and reams of information about what might help. And, you know, some of it's just insane, like kind of like, I don't know, put your foot in a bucket at midnight and, you know, just trying to pick out the things which are going to be helpful and going to be useful. And I was like, okay, we'll probably take on board some of that stuff. I mean, I have no qualms about being really honest about this, because I hope that it will be helpful to people. But we went to see, we went privately to see like if IVF might help us. And I remember the chap was so matter of fact. And again, I passed this information on to the people that may see him. And he was just like, nope, that's not going to happen. But like, we will not even do IVF for you because you're not going to get pregnant. And I remember having that meeting going like, okay. But in my head, I was like, I don't think you can tell me what to do. So I remember just coming away going, no, I'm going to read about that bucket. I'm going to be put both feet in that bucket. And I think I really threw myself into the challenge. But that's not to discredit the fact that for huge amounts of people, it's not about how much work you put in at all. But for me, I found it beneficial and helpful to think about the things that I could just try and do. And someone advised me, they said, try everything you can, and then when it comes to the time that you think you probably stop trying, then you've done everything and you'll be at peace with that. And we really genuinely did get to a place, I think, where I was like, yeah, I was within the recurrent miscarriage clinic here at our local hospital, who are amazing. I was on a trial program with like taking progesterone, which I think was what led us to have a successful second pregnancy. Again, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, I do think whether it's 1 or 10. Yeah, I read on a forum someone had like 26. And you just think 1 or 26, it's just like, geez, it reinforces to me how incredible I believe women to be, how they can endure and share and support. And that's with bones. This is all that is like, that is a poem of support. And just saying like, it's a shit club, but it's a really supportive one. So just, I suppose it's just my way of trying to take something positive out of that painful journey.
I guess because that poem Bones, I felt that when I read it, and you talked then just about womanhood in general. Mm. I found the journey of womanhood into motherhood, there are a lot of things that shocked me that I sort of hadn't realized that women had to take on. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, it's quite a long chat I could have about that.
That's all we're here for. That's all we're here for, Jo. Do share.
I think as well, the thing which I didn't realise was how important having a sense of humour would be. And how it's just like, I mean, Mabel, I wanted to ask you, how old is your youngest now?
She's 18 months.
Amazing. 18 months. Mabel is 19 months. So she literally probably in the last 4 days has really switched on and like properly smash up everything. So Christmas tree, why are we putting those up? Because it's literally like, oh, boom, boom. And my son is just like, you can hear him just like, Mabel, please don't. And he's just like trying to quietly do his stuff. So I think that thing about motherhood and womanhood that I didn't really realize was this kind of like need to learn some techniques to just calm down when this is like so intense and it's like everyone's just being themselves. So no one's trying to be, you know, like a dickhead or anything. Everyone is literally living their life. And there's quite a lot of noise and there's a lot more noise than I expected. But also embracing that and just trying to work some techniques to myself rather than just like, I tend to let things build up and thinking like, you're six, surely you can see that I'm struggling with this. And it's like, of course he can't because he's wonderful and he's being six. And I let things build up and I'm like, ah! And I think I just need to try and like kind of like chill the things out of it and just be like, have another ultimate thing I think I learned with the motherhood thing is like, have some expectations and throw them out the window as far as you can. Don't expect anything you think to happen. So if you have any plans, put them in the bin. If you want to go somewhere, you'll be late. I don't know. Just like, it's just literally nothing is going to end up as you expected. And that's going to be okay. You know, that whole like, it's fine. It's fine. Everything's okay.
Yeah. It's so interesting because we have kids pretty much the exact same age. So I have a son who's six and a daughter who's 18 months.
Perfect.
And we sort of were going to have kids a bit closer together and then I had that miscarriage and it took me a long time to build up to actually trying again because it was such a traumatic experience for me. But then I've ended up with this daughter who I would not change with the world, but she is just a roller coaster of a human, just like tumbling through our lives. Like, and I read that poem from your beautiful new book, These Are My Delicious Sandwiches, called Glass Ceilings. And it just encapsulated my daughter to an absolute T. Do you mind if I read it? Could I read it?
Oh, please do. That would be amazing. Thank you.
I'd love to read it for the listeners who might not have seen it on my Instagram, and then we'll talk about it a bit more. So, glass ceilings. My daughter wants to eat wires and scale the chairs to precipitous heights. My daughter likes to chew the spikes of wood on the table edge and reach for the fence with the sharpest point. She wants to traverse the lands that shout, "Not now, not yet," and pays no heed to, "You shall not pass." There is no time for restricted areas, for stop, halt, for who goes there? My daughter wants to eat wires, and frankly, who am I to say no? Why did you write that? Where did that come from? I think I know.
Oh, it's so lovely hearing you read that. Thank you. Just before I say about it, I wanted to say I'm really sorry that you had that experience as well. I know it's really difficult.
Thank you.
So that glass ceilings, because Mabel, Miracle Mabel, she's like, we didn't know we were going to have her, and she is so wild. It's amazing. It sounds like yours is too, because it's just, and maybe it's because you have this gap that you forget, and it's kind of a gift again, because I'm like, oh, all right, oh, you're not there, okay. Everything is like, oh, I mean, because we thought Arthur was wild, but she is like, honestly, like chewing, it's like, oh, splinters in your mouth, and like now with the baubles, it's like, are they glass, because she will chew them. It's everything is so extreme, and it's like pulling out the plug in, plug out, on, off, and just like, it's so extreme that you can't, and I don't know if you're just busier the second time, so you're like trying to cook, oh, no, don't do that, and it's just like, It's every day, and I just again trying to be like, okay, who's had a takeaway again? Us, because it's just like we can't cook because you're eating everything that's like going to kill you. So I think that was it. But absolutely, again, in this room, we have quite a small house, hence why most things are written in this room. But yeah, I remember just looking at her, and it was just like, you're just chewing that. It's like so sharp. And I think I just gave in a bit, and I was like, well, A, you're going to keep doing it. And like, look at you. And she was then, that's when she climbed a chair, because she was trying to get to the door handle to get outside. And it's like, you go for it. You go within reason. You go for it. You go for it within some safety bound, you know, with some health and safety applied. But just like, yeah, we are told, again, going on to the womanhood, I have to be like, I've got a lot of anger about the being held back a lot and about a certain type of white man. So I have to be really careful that someone that doesn't come out too awfully. But I just think, yeah, you know, we're told so often what we can do, what we can't do. And it's just like, yeah, go on, you go. I'm here to support you the whole way, Mabel. You can do anything. My parents told me, you can do anything. We're here for you and we'll support you with anything. And it's given me so much, not necessarily confidence, but it's given me so much power behind my feet to fly. And I just want to empower both the children and, well, in fact, both of them absolutely equally to just get out there and do it. And I just think, yeah, go on, Mabes. We're not going to stop you unless it's really dangerous. Then we will stop your bits. But she is, and I love it. Even my husband, who's like, you know, he's a skateboarder, Arthur goes skateboarding, they do pretty extreme stuff together, and even he is like, we thought she was going to be the quiet one, and she is wild, you know, finds a scooter, she's off, it's like, you're 3 months, what are you doing? But yeah, I love that poem for that reason, to just be like, yeah, just keep doing it, keep climbing, totally. Keep doing stuff.
Yeah, my daughter bites through whole lemons, like through the rind to the juice, and sucks the juice out. She will eat anything. She's like me. She loves food and is like voracious with her appetite for everything. And I want that for her too. I don't want her to be, because I grew up with a wonderfully supportive family, but I absorbed a lot of external stuff about not wanting things too much. Don't eat too much. Don't desire things too much. Limit yourself. Be quieter. Maybe it was school. I don't know. What was your experience of that?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I was reading just this morning about schooling and how this, you know, the carpet idea where you sit on a carpet at the end of the day because they need to the children to be quiet for the story. And I was just reading this article this morning. It was about home education. And they were saying how to enable that to happen, the teacher might say to the child, throw your voice out the window to enable this quiet thing to happen. And obviously it's a means to an end, but that's kind of sad, isn't it? Because our voices are very important, and it's that balancing act. And going back to your question, I went to an all-girls school, but you didn't pay to go there. It was a grammar school, so you had to pass an exam. So I suppose it was very achievement based. I hesitate because my experience of it is so different to my sister's experience of it. I won't speak about her experience directly because I haven't spoken to her to say I would, but of other people I know that went there, it was very led by your achievements, what grade you were going to get. It was all about getting A stars, getting the best, the best, the best. But my experience of it, and I don't wish to sell myself down because I came out of it with some, I'm very proud of my results, but I had a very laid back approach to it, I think. And some of the kind of like, must achieve, which a lot of the students there found a bit stressful. I think I had a kind of like, I'm okay with what I've done approach. I really loved English. And I was happy with what I was doing. So I could have definitely worked harder. I could have achieved more. But I think I would thank my parents again for being like, we're proud of you, whatever you do. And maybe they would see that as backfiring on them slightly because I could have got better grades. But I had a really enjoyable experience. But I could really see that there were other people struggling in terms of the results. But hugely as well, I'm looking back with rose-tinted glasses because in terms of like there was some extremely disordered eating going on, all that kind of thing. And that's so important to me to try and foster like a healthy approach to all of that with the children, both of them, in the way that we talk about bodies and food and things like that. And so what you said is kind of like, I think maybe 30 years ago, whatever, it was like, don't take up too much space and be quite quiet. I'm hopeful that now we can be like, take up the space, but in a really respectful way, and like be really noisy, but sometimes you need to be a bit quiet. You know, it's just like,
yeah, exactly.
It's to be really confusing to them because when I hear it back, it's like, what? But that's why I'm so hopeful that we can try and foster in them, because I know exactly what you mean, that like the sort of narrative maybe when we were younger leads to some confusion for us, I think, because I'm just so keen to do the right thing, to not get things wrong, to like, you know, well, you must do the right thing. And I think that's important because I don't want to be a dick and I want to do the right thing, but it can stop you from doing things. I had the first experience the other day where someone asked me to enter for a poetry, this like a performance. And I considered it, and I'm extremely appreciative of being asked and being thought of. And I was like, I can't do that. I don't think that's for me. I don't think I can do that. And I just thought, my word, wow. I was really surprised at myself for thinking I didn't want to do it, and I was scared and it wasn't for me. And I was like, why is that then? And I think it was attached to age and things like that. And I thought, that's real shame that I'm thinking that. And I don't really want to hear myself thinking that, oh, young people wouldn't want to hear me saying stuff. Or I was quite confused by it, Claire. I was just like, this is a real new thing. I spoke to my husband about it, and I spoke to someone else. They're just like, well, you know, just go for it. It's fine. And then if you decide you don't want to do it, then you don't. But don't prevent yourself from applying or putting yourself forward because of those kind of lacks of confidence or doubts in yourself. But I thought, wow, that's interesting. And I wonder, I'm really interested in the conversations about perimenopause and menopause and all of this kind of stuff, and interested to take the conversations on to listen to them. But it really scares me. I think the way that the conversations are going, I'm like, can I speak to the management, because I did not sign up for that. But when I had this kind of like doubt, I was thinking, oh God, what is this? Is this thing that's coming? Am I, oh God. So I'm really keen to seek out, and I'm just trying to seek out now, like, experiences that people have had of the menopause or the perimenopause where they're being really open and honest about it. But there's a good ending, because a lot of things I've read recently, it's like quite the journey, and I'm fine. We're going to strap in and like face it and do it together with everybody. But yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah. And so, because how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 44.
Look 44.
Oh, thank you so much. But I think that's part of the reason why I think that when we struggled to have our second child, I think that was all sort of age related. Hence why I'm thinking, oh, are those doors going to be opening sooner than I possibly expected? But that's fine. I just want to be educated around it, and then we'll see what's going to happen. But in terms of like, I don't want it to cloud my judgment on taking things on. But again, I think this whole pandemic has had such an effect on my confidence and anxiety levels. Like, there's a constant, I've got constant low level buzz of like anxiety and worry. And I think that's a shame if that stops us doing things. And I thought, yeah, I am scared of this opportunity, and I'm still going to try and see what happens, because that's a good example for the children as well.
It totally is, because I agree. I'm 36, but I did feel for some reason this kind of pull to be less, because I'm older, but not just because I'm older, but because I'm a mother.
Yes, kind of pull
to not be as vocal and not want things for yourself, that you should only want things for your kids, and that it's selfish to sit in that and do new things and try new things, because mothers should be selfless.
Hugely.
Yeah.
I hugely agree with that. And it's kind of like, we do ourselves a disservice. And by saying we do ourselves a disservice, I'm again putting the onus on us for doing something wrong. But we do feel like we shouldn't do things, or that it's somehow taking time away from us looking after our children. I think the fact that we worry so much about it means that we're great mums, because if we weren't worrying about it, then we wouldn't, you know, be doing the job that we hope that we're doing, I suppose. But we're doing the book launch, which I'm so excited about doing. But it's all around, like, because I'm still breastfeeding, Mabel's up a lot. If she wakes up, she probably at the moment won't be able to go back to sleep unless I'm around, which is fine, because they get up and they watch something calm on television, and they have a cuddle, which is fine. But I'm trying to plan this launch, and it's like, it's just a couple of hours out. But even then, I know it'll be like, oh, I hope everything, of course, it's just natural to worry, but you have to still do the things. And maybe they take a slightly different shape, and that's fine, because it means that you're all getting to do something, and the children are okay as well. So I went out for my first night out about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Like, I stayed up too long and I drank the wrong drinks, and I felt so sad, because Wes was like really late on going, I'm really sorry, but she's definitely not asleep still. probably need to come back now. And he'd been so nice. I thought, oh, bless you. You have let me stay out so long. And she's been up for so long. And I just thought, oh, I just felt so. So I was like, oh, my goodness, yes, I'm come back now. And then the next day I was sick all day because I drank too much. And I was just like, this is rubbish. I need to get like the balance here because I've had a great time. But then like my thought, yeah, this is not quite worked. So from now on, I've been trying to do a little bit more of a like, okay, 2 hours. That's great. Let's do some of that and enjoy it and not feel guilty and, you know, make they're all safe and looked after. So.
Yeah, it is hard though, isn't it, when you realise that in order for the wheels not to fall off everything, you need to be in bed by 9:30, 9 o'clock, you know, because everyone will be up overnight and it becomes just a whole massive mess if you don't. And then the weighing, you know, the weighing up of also wanting to be a person who's autonomous and has a life away from your kids too, which I think is important so that you feel refreshed and revitalized and they see you having a life outside the kids as well. I don't know, but then when I'm there, as soon as I leave, I ring James and I'm like, is everything all right? And he's like, you've been gone for 10 minutes. Everything is completely fine.
So I know. I have to, like, as I'm going out the door, I'm shouting stuff like, don't let them climb in the oven. And it's like, oh, yes.
Yeah. It's like, we won't. Yeah, exactly. I'm ringing James being like, so I just remembered that maybe I left some of that jewelry and she could swallow that and it's just on the bench because I was rushing out the door. And he's like, she's nowhere near the bedroom and I'm an adult human being who has eyes. Yeah. I know what she's like. She'd eat them. I've like closed the bedroom door. It's fine.
Everything is good.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really kind of hard tug and pull, isn't it? I know Elizabeth Gilbert writes about this as well. Being a creative person and someone who has that kind of creative force, when you become a mother, how you still maintain that side of yourself. How have you, is your poetry an expression of that, of you being able to hold on to your creative self?
Massively. Like, I just really need it. I really need to be able to write. And it's just, my way of it's absolutely my coping mechanism and the coping mechanism but also that outlet for creativity, because otherwise I think I would feel that you're just literally like a vessel for enabling other things to happen all the time. And I cherish that time, and maybe that's why I'm looking forward to a period of time where I will have much more time to put into it. So everything at the moment I can see, I love the journey of the books. I can really see the development that's happening in them. And they're very, by their very nature, they're something I think about, and then get onto the page very quickly, as I said earlier. So they're quite succinct, quite pithy. And I'm looking forward to exploring at a later date some longer form writing. But at the moment, this really works for me. And it's like a need when they're in there, and it's like something I've really got to process. I marinate on it, and it develops, and then when the time is right, I just be like, right, I can sit down and get this all onto the page, and I just feel a whole lot better, and like I've started to process that. I mean, gosh, the last 2 years has just been just overwhelming, as you know, you're going through the same thing.
Yeah, what was it like for you to give birth during the pandemic? I know that you wrote that beautiful poem, Birth Plan. And I mean, we both did the same thing, right? I gave birth in May and you gave birth maybe, was it the month before, in April?
Yeah.
What was it like then in the UK? I mean, we're in Australia, so we had a different experience here.
I think for me it was because we'd gone through this pathway to get Mabel, the whole of the pregnancy was just like, let's just hope this works. Sort of that low-level anxiety again throughout the whole pregnancy, and just like wanting to get to the end line. It was just like everything that came along was like right, and you could feel still, you know, this knot in my stomach that still, I mean, I don't even know when it's all coming out, maybe next year, but just this like knot of like feelings, and just like the right, okay, we're just gonna absorb that, because it was just like, here's another thing, your children are gonna be at home, oh, no one can be there, you're gonna have to give birth to your own child by yourself down the end of the garden in a shed or something. I don't know. It's just a constant, like, your, because first of all, then it was like, oh, my parents, you know, the plant, goodness, I'm sure it's the same for you. It's like, my mum and dad, oh, we'll come for 2 weeks. We'll come. We can take Arthur out. It'll be great. You know, you can relax and look after the new baby. Then it's like, oh, we probably can't come. We definitely can't come. Oh, we won't see you for a year. It's, you know, all these things. So like giving birth in the hospital again was like, Wes can't be there. You can, and it literally was that. I had an induction. So for the induction process, he wasn't allowed to be there. And you had to be like, give him a ring.
Yes.
Like, right, now, go. Now's the time. And it's, you know, with an induction process or with the second, it's quite quick. So I was just like, oh man, like, I hope we can get him there. But saying that, they were, I mean, the NHS was incredible. We were so well looked after. But it's quite a lot, isn't it, giving birth? I'm just thinking back to it now.
Oh my gosh.
Quite a day. Yeah, but it was all, it all came about. And she came and it was just like, you know, it was just a, oh, the child is here. Just then everything, you just forget it all, don't you? And we were like, oh, she's really pretty. We're like, where did she come from? And so that was really nice. But then, of course, because of how things go, Wes then had to leave and he got some horrendous, like, norovirus from the hospital. Poor man. And so then he, whilst I was in hospital, he was in hospital because of that. It was just like, man, oh, man. And that has been just, I think that's just been the, yeah.
The icing again on the cake.
Yeah, and but then in the next 6 to 12 months, we're constantly getting given these things, thrown these, catch, hold it, ooh, it's another one, okay. And I think with the writing, his outlet is skating. He goes out and does that. With the writing, that's mine. And it's great because it's something I can do when I, even though I may be in the house, I'm in my own world and it's wonderful. And I love it dearly. I just love it so much. It's like, it's just reminds me of being young as well. And I remember writing as a young girl and how freeing that is to be able to work through the incredibly challenging things that all of us have to go through. And that's, you know, I paint a picture of everything's been like, ah, but it's also been, ah, at the same time, you know. It's been a difficult, it's been a challenging 2 years, but it's been a wonderful 2 years. And I've enjoyed being able to write about those things and I want to remember them because time's flying by and it's nice to be able to remember all of these things.
It is,
and I'll be able to write a poem again soon about that time. I tried to do a podcast and then my dad like constantly texts me and I didn't know how to turn it off. So that's the next one. I can't wait till afterwards. But I won't be able to like tell them because, well, hopefully mum will listen to this, but I can't be like, oh, well, you know that podcast, we've got quite a lot of texts. And they'll be like, oh no, I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah. They sound like so supportive and beautiful. And on that, actually, I wanted to ask you about the poem Dishes because it strikes me that you have a wonderful partner. I'm just imagining from the sounds of it, a wonderful skater partner. Could you tell us about the poem Dishes and what it means?
Yeah. Because we were having a chat about, I'm trying to think about how I can phrase this so well and delicately in advance. So we were having a discussion about how some people within relationships might become frustrated if there's a lack of intimacy. And I was just saying, well, I think we must have been watching something or something was sparked off from something we were discussing. And it was just like the woman wasn't necessarily particularly enthusiastic. And I was like, well, she's probably got quite a lot to do, hasn't she? So she's probably got quite a lot of washing up to do and whatever it is, I don't know, that's going on, like all the stuff she's got to do. So maybe, you know, she's a bit tired. And that's not in the forefront of her mind in the tiredness when, you know, a child's eating a table, you know.
Exactly. It's not very sexy when you're looking around, there's like half folded washing and something in the dryer that you've left there and there's all the dishes in the sink and then like someone's like thrown up on the couch. It's not like overly, you know, there's bills sort of sitting around everywhere.
Yeah. And I was just saying to him that like it's all about how you phrase it. I was thinking, you know, if you were to say, oh, you know, oof, we haven't done it in a while, shall we? You know, that's probably not the most romantic delivery. Whereas if you were to be like, do you know what? I've done the washing up. You ever sit down, you might be like, oh, that's very attractive. That is a really attractive thing. And you're like, oh, but it's just, yeah. So that's where that comes from, where it's just literally, again, about communication and how you can help that, how you can use communication to to just help your relationship work in a nice way. And like, I think also things aren't transactional. I just think all these things along the way help each other to just try and have a slightly easier path. Someone making you a cup of tea, you know, or just being like, how's your day? You must be tired.
Yeah.
Just a bit of washing up might, you know.
Might help things along.
Yeah. And doing something for each other.
Mm, totally. I once got given some beautiful advice. Actually, it might have been the comedian Patton Oswalt, so not directly to me, you know, in a comedy special. But still, yeah. He was talking to lots of people. And it was just about, it's chaos, be kind. And I often think about that in terms of relationships. I think when I was younger, I thought it was all about who they were for me and what I could imagine him doing for me. And my dad actually said this to me, that really when you think about it, and if you're both thinking about your relationship being for the other person, when it's truly equal like that, it means that you cut each other some slack, you know, and you realize life is bloody hard. And we're not perfect. We can't expect the other person to be perfect. But those tiny little things, the doing of the dishes, make life just that much easier and make your relationship work. I know Esther Perel talks about this too, that sort of desire for women, or for me anyway, and I know for a lot of women, is built in those small moments. Like it might start in the morning when someone makes you a coffee and says, you want to lie in and I'll get the kids breakfast or something. And it starts with a hand on the small of your back while you're doing the dishes in the kitchen, you know, and then it builds over the day. And I've actually tried to talk to my partner about this, because I don't know if men, and this is such a spectrum because human beings are all different, but for my man anyway, and I sneakily suspect he's similar to some others as well, it doesn't have to be a story for him. He's just like, oh, I feel like it. She looks good. You want to, you know, off we go. Whereas I think for women it's deeper than that, right? It's often there's a story, a narrative, a building of something.
Yeah, massively. Like I heard, it was so beautiful this morning. I could hear Wes like talking to the children going like, oh, you've got a good one there, haven't you? And you're just like, oh, you're so lovely. And like when I see him doing like lovely things with the children, I'm just like, it's just lovely. Yeah. And I suppose it is just this build up of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're a good lovely. One. No, that's so lovely. And that's kind of what that evoked, that dishes poem for me. It was just so glorious.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tiny lungs I loved. And I wanted to ask you again, I'm kind of jumping all over the place because that's the way my brain works.
Suits my brain very well.
Oh, good. Excellent. Replay/rewind. Do you want to talk to us about that poem?
Yes, that is, I'm just preoccupied with like the passing of time very much in my writing and the magnitude of that. I have to allow myself periods of time to think about it, and then I have to be like, stop and move on, because the magnitude of the passing of time and just not wanting to miss anything, not wanting to miss anything with these glorious children. I mean, God, I like adore them. Obviously everyone does. I just adore them so much that I'm just trying to take snapshots and remember all of these things, because it's like unbearable how my time is passing. I look at Arthur and I, you know, just telling him every day how much, like, I love you so much. You know, I mean, I'm sure he'll think back and be like, she said that a lot, didn't she? but it's just that, just trying to capture it, just trying to remember it. And I'm sure it's the same, you know, you have this long, long day and you think, gosh, sometimes you think dinner time, bedtime, I'm keen to get them to bed. And then afterwards I think, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. And there you're like looking at your phone, looking at pictures of them, just like, I love you. So just this desperation to capture it. And I feel we've done a classic thing with Mabel where, you know, we've got reams and reams of video of Arthur and look, Arthur, it's a chip on the floor. And he's like, oh, you know, and for her, it's just like, oh, she's 25. Quick, get a graduation. So I'm just, again, keen to be like, stop and try and get like videos of her as well. And so that with Replay Rewind, it's just literally a desperate attempt to try and capture this time on the page. I try so hard. I'm constantly trying to write that poem. And these are just iterations of it again and again and again, of trying to like kind of time stamp onto paper and burn it in my mind so I can like remember. And this year, again, this is one of the surprises that came along. I've developed this chronic eye condition where I was really losing my sight. Again, sense of humour is coming into it. And that's been an overwhelming piece of information. So I can't really see very well out of my left eye now. And it's devastating to me, the thought that I won't be able to see the children's faces. It's a really hard piece of information to kind of take on board. So these poems, again, take on a form of trying to somehow write these things down onto paper to sort of forge the memory of when they were written and what I was looking at, things like that. So there'll be more of them, just trying to kind of like capture it all, really. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I do a lot of squinting, like just seeing that. It's just it's like a hormone related thing, I think. So I'm hopeful that my right eye will stay well. It's such a new thing. I'm not quite sure what the correct terminology is around that. But yeah, I think a lot of my writing now is going to be dealing with those kind of things and the aging process. As I said at the start of this little piece, I kind of allow myself pockets of the day to think about things like that, because you can get lost down those rabbit holes and you don't necessarily need to. I think they're good ones to go down because it gives you a huge amount of gratitude, and it's good to have them as a parallel with all the other wonderful things. And it also gives you a huge amount of perspective when your daughter has jumped in mud or poo and they're, you know, freshly dressed and you're just like, oh, you know, come on, everything's okay, we'll crack on. So yeah, Replay Rewind. I haven't got that one up. I've got some of the poems up, and that one actually I might put in Arthur's room, I think. I love that.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I'm so sorry that's happening to you. That's not fair. Bloody hell, universe.
Ew, I know.
How does this black?
Yeah, it's just a new one that I'm working out, that one. It's not like a definite. We don't quite know what's happening with that. So we'll just wait and see. But again, you know, I get to see things slightly differently. try and throw like some kind of positive. Didn't think that was going to happen. So yeah.
No, the older that you get, hey, life tends to just throw more things at you and you realize how little control you have over what's going to happen. And if you think about that too much, it's scary. But I also find in the hardest times, there's also kind of life becomes a bit technicolor and you see.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful expression. Yeah.
Yeah. In that kind of real clarity, it's like you wrote that phrase, the light on a sequin.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved that writing too for that reason, because it's that like tiny glint of something. It's so beautiful but so fleeting, and I can see that in your writing. That's kind of what it evokes for me. I loved all your writing. I've talked to so many people about it because I just think it's so special.
Thank you so much. Reason. So appreciate it, like hugely. That I was so fortunate to have that Pandora Sykes recommendation, because it opened up some wonderful connections for me. It's just wonderful. I love chatting with you. I feel like, you know, I've known you for years, and all these connections that it has created it's magical. It's lovely, particularly when the pandemic was going on, because you're just like, life's great. Life's amazing, you know? And like, it's, there is so much to cherish and so much to be thankful for. Yeah. And yeah, it is that, that when it is a bit difficult, there's the light on the sequin to remember all the stuff that's like amazing now has been amazing, and some amazing things to remember.
Mm, absolutely. That reminded me of the poem Christmas Box.
Oh, yeah.
As well, because we, I think everyone has one, right, in their cupboard. Well, I do, that you bring out, and it's just this sort of rabble of strange dangly things that you put on your tree. And mine's sort of a collection of wonderful rose gold beautiful things that I bought before I had kids, and now like laminated like weird Santas and like cotton on their faces and stuff. Yeah, do you want to tell us about Christmas Box?
Yeah, I think that's, again, the one, the Christmas box in my mind is the one in my mum and dad's house, where it really is that mix of, I think my mum was trying to like bring back the good ones, like as we got a bit older as well, like we started to go to the special shop, the shop which isn't there anymore, and get the ones, like every year we'd get one new special one. And that would be like, I could see, maybe that's a part of the womanhood thing, that you have this transition, the bauble transition, where you have the beautiful ones, then they get a bit crazy, and then you like slowly try and get the other ones back in again. Yeah, and it just reminds me of this box when at the bottom you've still got it, even though she might be like, you know, the shinier ones are coming in, you've still got the weird, like, I think it's like shredded wheat, like sleigh, which is very bent, and I think most of the things have come off, and you just look at it and you're like, oh, I love that sleigh. Like, you know, the like glitter bits and things, and I just love that even then, like, my mum and dad are like, there's the sleigh that's coming out, and it's just lovely. It's absolutely, I mean, it just sums up so much about families, where you're all vying for this notion of what you think might happen, but really it's just this crazy little box with yes. all of you in it, and like that's why you love it, and you wouldn't change it for the world. And you know what, if someone came along and said, your box is kind of like, oh, you've got some odd stuff in there, you'd be like, it's my box, you know. It's like, don't say anything about my box, because it's amazing, you know. And it's just like, that's the beauty of families, because yes, Mabel's eating wires, jumping in the mud, but you're like, you know, and you might have your moment of thinking like, oh, okay, what time can we leave? You know, but you're, if anyone else was to criticize, you'd be like, Mabel, jump in that mud, yeah. Get another wire, eat that, you know, because they're yours. And I'm literally looking at our tree right now. And this year, Arthur has decorated that on Saturday with the most pride. And it looks, I reckon our tree looks very similar to your tree right now. The top half very busy, bottom half not much going on. And as each day passes, the baubles are moving up, because Mabel's breaking everything, because we were putting them on, we were like, oh Arthur, here's the one that you made, oh no, don't eat them. Like, it's just becoming, yeah, it's quite top heavy, but it will be a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
And we've got our box now, yeah, so our box of like the misshapen things all bunged in coming out every year, and we'd absolutely love it.
Yeah, our Christmas tree, my son decorated with pride, and it has a love letter to Santa on the top of it with a transformer in grey lead written on the front. Yes. So good on you, mate. Aww. He's done it well. So funny.
But it's not like that, the hours of work that go in, it's just like when they're doing all that drawing, it's just, oh my heart, isn't it just like, I love you.
Yes.
Don't stop drawing, please. I'm so like, have you heard that thing, like, I don't know, I can't remember who phrased it, but they say like, as your children go through their teenage years, it's the worst breakup you've ever gone through. And I am not ready. So yeah, I'm like, yeah, I know it's a long time coming, but that's why it's just like every day, like, just staying in again. Yeah, staying in, good, let's all stay in together.
Yes, that's what happens to me. I leave the house and then I'll see a friend for coffee, and on the way I'll be thinking, these moments I'll never get back again. And James is like, we're literally eating Weet-Bix in front, around the kitchen table.
Yeah, and she's like 19 months. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Oh, but no. It is, I know, I read a piece of writing that broke my heart, that was that with your son especially, it's like a breakup And also that motherhood is like a series of small griefs, because each little person that you meet at that time, you'll never see again because they get older each time. I'm going to make you cry again, and I've already cried.
That is amazing. I'm taking that. That's giving me goosebumps. Oh, do you know the amount of people in my life are going to be like, well, life is like all these series of, I'm having that. That's so beautiful. Oh, thank you. Oh, I love that.
Oh, look, it wasn't me that wrote it. I think it was a writer in Australia called Mia Friedman.
Oh, so I have to write that down. Very well. I have to write that down. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, oh, also, I can play it back. I don't need to take notes.
No. No, but take the note, go for it. Yeah. I think that's really worth it. And look, I know we've reached an hour, so I'm conscious that you have kids and life to get back to. But I feel like I could talk to you forever. Let's be friends. Can we be friends?
Yes, please. Yeah, well, I'm having you. That's it. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. It's like an absolute treat for me. I was like, yes, I can't wait for this. So, I've loved talking with you. Thank you.
Oh, I've loved it too. And I really think that a lot of people will get a lot out of it as well. I think we're all going to go and research perimenopause and menopause and try and figure out what the bloody hell we're in for. That's what I think.
Yeah.
After this as well. Well, congratulations. It's absolutely beautiful, your new book, These Are My Delicious Sandwiches.
Yeah, I should show you. So this is, it should be, yours is on its way to you. So I'm really hopeful.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I hope it won't take long. It's, do you know what? I mean, I haven't even mentioned Brexit. So that's causing a few holdups our end, but hopefully it will be with you soon. So yeah, that's on, there's a link via my Instagram where you can go and find the books and the postcards and my shop.
Oh. Thank you. Yeah. Just because for a curious little mind, what do you mean by Brexit's causing the holdups?
We've just had a lot of problems in terms of things being distributed, in terms like changing the way that we're packaging things up, changing the way that how much the postage is. It's just causing lots of problems. Yeah, it's just a little bit painful. But I mean, I'm just extremely anti-Brexit. So I'm sure it could rain and I'd be like, Brexit. But yeah, I'm just so against it. But yeah, it's just cause for me, I think in terms of, I've been really fortunate that I've sold a lot of books in Australia, probably because of your good self, and also in America. So in terms of shipping them out, I was really keen to do things independently. It's just the shipping costs are so high now. But again, it's also due to the pandemic. There's a lot of holdups with things. Things taking a long time to ship across. So I hope it won't take too long. And you can join me soon for my hour-long discussion on Brexit and the problems it's caused. I should probably do that. No, I should do that. I should do that.
I thought you meant that you were giving a speech about Brexit.
I should.
I could join you on Zoom. Excellent. I'll be there. I'll have to listen to all of it.
Just be like an hour of me like swearing or something like that.
Oh, God. That sounds like me on a regular day. One of my mum friends has something she calls the, and excuse my language, the fuck cupboard, and it's not for what you think it would be for. It's for her to open the cupboard when she's with her kids and just go FFFFF into the cupboard, shut the door, and then, yes, of course I'll get you another sandwich.
Man, do you know what I need? I definitely need a fuck cupboard because my son is like constantly like, oh, you said the F word again. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. We need to get our house renovated at some point, and I definitely am definitely adding a fuck cupboard onto the like blueprint. That is
amazing. That's how you can tell the designer. I love it. Fantastic. Well, I should ask you before we go, why is it called These Are My Delicious Sandwiches? Your latest book?
So this one, These Are My Delicious Sandwiches, was, there's a poem in the book called Sandwiches, and it's a line that's taken from it, and it was written because I have a few issues with people stealing some of my creative work, and I also have some artist friends where their work gets stolen by big corporations. And These Are My Delicious Sandwiches is all about, this is my work and this is my stuff, don't steal it, please. I might lend you some, but please don't steal it. And going back to that, like, you know, just asking. before people take things. And These Are My Delicious Sandwiches is I wanted to call a book this because it's about, this is my stuff, this is my space, I'm not afraid to take it up, I'd really like to share it, and I want you to be proud of your sandwiches too. I mean, it gets a bit tenuous, but I want you to be proud of your sandwiches too, and to own them, and to be proud of them, and share them when you want, but people can't steal them. So that's the pretty succinct explanation about what that is. But yeah, and I love it. I'm so pleased with the title. I love it because it's like, yeah, and Mabel, you have your sandwiches, you enjoy them, and you be proud of your sandwiches, and Arthur too. They're like, and share them when you want, but people can't take them. Don't share pictures of them on the internet though.
Exactly. These are private sandwiches just for the people that you want to share them with in person. Private, not online. We're not going there. No, thank you very much.
Oh, my, this is like literally the discussion points are so vast, aren't they? Oh, yes.
I know. We've pinged around like ping balls in a machine. But you know what? That's how my brain works, and I really appreciated it. So thank you so much, Joy. This has been such a pleasure, and what a joy. I can't wait for people to get to know you more because you're so much fun.
Honestly, likewise, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved chatting with you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Ah, you're welcome. And there we have it. Don't you just want to go and grab a coffee with Joe? Wonderful. Anyway, I've been Claire Tonti, and this week you've been listening to a podcast with Joanna Bennett, the poet Tatterhood. You can find Jo on Instagram at tatterhood_ or on her website tatterhood.co.uk, where you can order copies of all her books. A definite recommendation, especially if you need gifts for new parents too. You can find me at Claire Tonti on Instagram or on my other podcast, Suggestible, which comes out every Thursday with husband man James Clement. If you're after some recommendations for what to watch, read and listen to, head on over there. If you'd like to email the show, you can do so at tonspod@gmail.com. And super excitingly this year, the wonderful Maisie has jumped on our team and is creating an Instagram account for Tonts, which you can follow along at TonsPod. That's at TONTSPOD. Or you can also do the same thing for our Suggestible podcast at SuggestiblePod. So that's all over there on Instagram for weekly updates, or daily updates really. And we'd love to hear from you over there. As always, thank you to Raw Collings for editing this week's episode. And a super special thank you to Jo for making the time to talk to me. All right, till next week. See you soon. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.